And welcome back to WSHIT. We're on Crabapple's local news, like Elmer was on horses and glues. Newly elected Mayor Samuel Slowbush continues his remaking of Crabapple by slashing township positions, ignoring the township judges, and installing his own family, friends, and donors into high-ranking roles in city government. Today, Mayor Slowbush announced his pick for president of Crabapple's Women's Club, Tom Beetleberry. Mr. Beetleberry, of course, is the owner of Tom's Barber and Bourbon Bar on the west side of town. His pick, however, does not come without controversy. Many found Mr. Beetleberry's pick to be a surprise. Some in the community have pointed out that after 100 years of the Crabapple Women's Club, Mr. Beetleberry will be the first president of that club. That is, not a woman. After the swearing-in of Mr. Beetleberry, he gave remarks to the women's club. He had this to say when asked what advice he had for the women of Crabapple.
All you girls should do OnlyFans. All the men want to see you up in the strip club getting naked. Even topless, even down at the bottom. Honestly, they do. That's the truth. I ain't gonna lie, they want to see you naked.
Mr. Beetleberry was later escorted out of the building by local authorities after repeatedly calling his ex-wife on speakerphone and yelling, quote, "Are you happy you married my brother now?" End quote. WSHIT will stay on top of this one. We'll be back after this commercial break.
On this episode of The Commercial Break.
You could have done this tongue-in-cheek. There's so many different ways you could have done this and probably just, like, healed yourself and your reputation along the way. But you chose to pretend like you knew what you were talking about the second time, and you failed. This part of me feels a little, tiny, little bit empathetic toward Billy, because I think he's just a big lug nut. I think he's just a big dum-dum who's hoping that something works out in life. And I have been there. I'm that guy. I'm a big lug nut who hopes this all works out. That's kind of, I'm just like plodding through life, hoping the commercial break, you know, becomes Conan O'Brien overnight. It's not going to happen, but I hope it does.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh, yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green. This is a dear friend of mine and the co-host of this show, Krista Choi Hudley. Best to you, Krista.
Best to you, Brian.
Best to you out there in the podcast universe. I lost my mind there for a second. I don't know where it went.
Whee! She's my best friend. She's the co-host.
Yeah. My mouth is not working correctly. Yeah, welcome back. Hey, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. Well, Chrissy, this will be way old news by the time it broadcasts here. By the time it's getting to your ears, you'll already have heard about it. But breaking news. Now, as we're recording this, Firefest 2 is not happening.
Oh,
it is not happening. In the least surprising news of the year, Billy has managed to fuck it all up.
What's the latest? I saw that like a DJ had come out and talked about how she had turned it down.
Yeah, there's a couple of people who are out there saying, a couple of people have a very similar story to the story that I have, which is they had been contacted by representatives of Firefest over the years to participate in some shenanigans, and all you had to do was pay to be a part of it. Yeah, you can cover it if you pay for it, which is the pitch to me. This guy literally called me out of the blue. Said, I love your show. Billy loves your show. We want you to have, you know, exclusive rights to interview him on your show for this and that and the other thing. And then we went down the rabbit hole for, I don't know, 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, a month or something like that. And at the end, it was a pitch to get me to pay to go to New York to some exclusive Firefest 2 announcement event where I would pay $3,000. But he could get me tickets for $1,500, half price, because I was such a nice guy and they liked the show so much. And while I never spoke to Billy directly on the phone, I was CC'd on emails, and Billy responded to those emails from an email that seemingly was Billy's. Mm. I did some homework, and it seemed like it was Billy's. So Billy was in on this. This is just like one big scamorama. I mean, Billy, yeah. I'm not saying that Billy was trying to scam me out of money. I don't want to misspeak or make it, you know, make a mountain out of a molehill. It appeared that they were trying to get me interested in a press event where you had to pay to be at the press event, which is unlike any press event I've ever heard of.
Which was going to be announcing a fest that now is not happening.
That's right. It was a festival to announce a festival that is now not a festival. There you go. Just like the first festival.
Yeah.
But Deadmau5 responded to the news that this has been postponed indefinitely saying, well, that sucks. So people are trying to determine whether Deadmau5 has said this kind of jokingly or if he was actually involved in this. Here's how it all went down. Billy had a Billy was supposed to do it in some
He was supposed to announce the lineup, right?
He was supposed to Well, here's how it goes. Let me give you a timeline of events. He announces that Firefest 2 is happening. He has a team on the ground in Mexico because he can't attend because he has a...
He's on probation.
He's on probation because he's got an ankle monitor.
That in itself is pretty hilarious.
It's pretty funny. But he says, don't worry, I've got professionals involved. He names some of those professionals, which people find out they are semi-professional. They're professional in the way that Jamland Productions was professional. You know what I'm saying? We did do festivals.
They had a website.
They had a website, and they occasionally did an event. Like, an event inside of a club. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, not really an event. Kind of like, the venue was already there. They just made...
Promoted it.
Yeah, they just made those glossy postcards you hand out on the street. That's what they did. So next thing that comes is there is a location given. People by east, west, like latitude, longitude, people put that in their old search machine and find out that that's in the middle of the ocean.
Right.
There's no land there. So that's the first indication that something has gone wrong. But it's going to be in this general area. But people can't, no one can figure out exactly what, who's playing, where are the stages, where do you stay. Billy puts a bunch of hotels on the website, says, these are our partners. You're going to have a great time. You're going to be hobnobbing with the best in the world and the brightest and the people, creatives and all this.
Also buy this $1 million package.
Yes,
$1
million. Yes, from $1,500 to $1 million. That's the ticket prices. And that quickly falls apart when the town where he claimed this was going to be and the hotels who he had said were his partners literally said,
No.
I have no idea. Yo no sé.
Yeah.
Yo no sé.
Yeah.
They had never been contacted. No one had ever talked to them, which is like an epic clusterfuck, given that the first Firefest fell on its face because there was no place to stay, to sleep, to eat. So you would think those bases would be covered first, but hence, no, it's Billy McFarland and nothing happened. So then, a couple of weeks later, so Billy, then the township comes out and says, we don't have any idea what he's talking about. Never had anybody file for any permits, give us any money. Yeah, you got to go down there and you got to grease the wheels and give a couple people 100 pesos and figure things. Like, this is the way this universe works, not only in Mexico, everywhere.
Right.
I don't, you know, get Jeff on. I'm sure he can tell us a few stories if he didn't want to do the festival again next year.
Right.
I get it. I've been there. I've done it. So in a very small way, but I've been there and I've done it. So he moves the festival without announcing the festival has been moved. It just magically appears about 100 miles down the coast.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's 100 miles down the coast. He puts this big press event together in which no press shows up, and he doesn't either because...
Well, nobody paid for it.
He has an ankle monitor. That's right. He has an ankle monitor, so he zooms in. And there's a bunch of, like, official-looking people from Mexico, but none of them are actually Mexican officials. They're just people that Billy has buddied up to that are talking smack because... That township, Quintana Roo, says, no. Yo no sé. Yo no sé. Yep. I don't know. I have no idea. This takes months to get these permits, and we have no idea. To which Billy responds, bullshit. We have the permits. I'll show them to you. So Billy smartly, in the way only Billy could do, puts them on Instagram, expecting that no one on Instagram has ever spoken Spanish before. Because when people start reading the permits, including myself, and I'm not that great of a Spanish speaker, but I can read pretty well, they are permits from the local venues, like a beach club.
Yeah.
We're talking like a beach club, like Panama City beach club, like Club La Vila type place, but much smaller. Not a festival grounds, like a tiny little club that allows them to have a 12-hour event for 250 people. Billy has already said up to 1,800 people are coming. So what are the other 1,450 people going to do? What are they, 1,650 people, what are they going to do? I don't know. I guess they're just not going to that particular event.
Well, Billy's, right. Wasn't it going to be at like different ones around the town or something?
He had one permit.
Like a bar crawl, but a festival crawl?
Yes. It's the most
DJ crawl?
Yes, it's the most expensive night out in Mexico of your life. That's what it is.
Exactly.
You might as well go to South Beach and just get drunk. At least the DJs will be good. I mean, at least you'll know who's playing. Billy messed this up from the beginning in so many ways that is like laughable.
It is.
And the fact that he didn't have his ducks in a row before he even made the announcement, said everything you needed to know about what was going to go down. This is no surprise that this was coming. And when he put those permits online claiming that this festival was happening, and when he put the permits on the line and people were like, dude, this, you have a permit for recorded music to be played to 250 people for a total of 12 hours. And it's a 4-day festival. What is going on? Who is playing? What are you claiming? What are you planning to do? He says, well, we're going to have lots of different entertainment. You might get an MMA, MMA tutorial from a real live MMA, martial artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. You might get a skateboarding tutorial from a real live pro skateboarder. Dude,
who cares?
Go on YouTube. No one cares. Go on YouTube. I'm not paying $1 million to hobnob with the 138th with the most popular MMA artist. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Retired NBA stars. I'm sure that some people want to buddy up to those people. Some people want to, you know, rub elbows with those folks. And people did buy tickets. How do we know this? Because the reason why we know the festival is postponed is because a ticket holder put out on Instagram or social media.
I mean, somebody who literally just had money to burn.
Yes, had money to burn. Or was going to be one of the few people who had the best story ever. Uh-huh. They were going to sell it to Netflix. They were going to have a book. They put out the email that they received. Now, here's what I will give credit to Billy for. And legally, I think he had no other choice. This person received a refund.
Oh.
And it said, when we announce the new dates, if you're able to attend, you'll have the first bite at getting a new ticket.
Oh, okay. So they did actually get a refund because I thought that was part of the paperwork
that
he put out too, which had the legal jargon
of
no refunds, no exchanges.
No refunds. Absolutely. No refunds, rain or shine. Mm-hmm. Even if the event doesn't happen,
right,
you're going to get no refunds. But they did refund at least this one person that's online admitting that they actually bought a ticket to Firefest too. I mean,
that does take balls.
It does take balls. But I can see, I could see if we had the money to burn. Like, if this show ever made money, I could see if
just
we had the money to burn just for the entertainment.
Just to go down the rabbit hole.
Just to be at some wild event that's going to really blow up. And I don't mean in the good way. Like, not glow up, blow up. And I could see wanting to be there to kind of document it, to
watch
see what goes down.
Crash?
Yeah, watch the train wreck. None of us want to be in a car wreck, but we all turn our heads when we see them. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I think, the reason to go down there. And I'm going to make the assumption that this person who has come out and shared this email, that was going to go down there for the same a content creator of some sort press or
sense.
Whatever. So Billy has now failed twice. But probably many more times that we don't know about, including this, New York announcement show and all this. Some other people have claimed that he tried to get them to buy tickets to an underwater rave. Like, they were going to go down with scuba gear and they were going to have headphones on someone was going to be spinning. I mean, come on. Honestly. What a dum-dum.
Wow.
Yeah. Billy, buddy. The funny thing is about all of this, to me, is that, okay, you made a mistake the first time. You got in way over your head. And Ja Rule went for the ride. Ja Rule. I noticed Ja Rule didn't poke his head out for Firefest, too.
No, he did not.
No.
None of the Jenners did either.
No.
Whoever was involved in the beginning.
No, smartly, right? Yeah. Ja Rule has not. I don't think Ja Rule has made a public appearance since.
I think
smartly he has not. He came this close to spending 6 years in jail.
Uh-huh.
But after
Ja Rule.
Ja Rule. I just can't get over Ja Rule.
I know.
Ja Rule. I don't know. Was John
good in the 90s?
Yeah, he had a thing.
Yeah.
He had a vibe. Yeah, I don't hate on Ja Rule.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see how Ja Rule managed to get himself involved in this. But then, didn't Ja Rule have
a good
restaurant?
Talker, I guess.
Yeah, he. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He talked himself right into a big paycheck from Billy and their investors. Didn't Ja Rule have a restaurant like Ja Bahamas or something?
Probably.
I think he did. And I think people were like online giving it a one star or something after that. Anyway, Ja Rule, nowhere to be found. The thing about this is, and speaking with a little bit of seriousness, you made a mistake, a big mistake, and you screwed a lot of people over, and you almost killed some people. And now, granted, these people had money to burn also. Like, they're not the most sympathetic characters in the world. But, okay, some people went down there with the best of intentions. You were famous enough after this whole debacle to really clean it up.
Yes.
And call some...
We've said that.
Yeah.
I mean... Do it right.
Do it right.
Like, change, do right by people.
Yes. It is the year of our Lord 2025. There are literally billionaires burning money on space dicks.
Yes.
You could have gotten someone to give you $1 million to, like, seed this whole thing. Got called in some real professionals, not some guys who would put some club events on, but some, like, real professionals, and put this all together, taking your time, put it all together, and done this the right way, where you never touch the money, but you're kind of
paid up front.
Yeah, you're kind of the puppet master. Yes, everyone paid up front, you know, tents on the ground long ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And you're kind of the puppet master, pulling the strings, learning as you go along, having some other professionals that have done this 12, 15, 300 times so that you really get an idea for what's going on. I think part of what got Billy in trouble in the first place is he had never done anything like this, and they tried to do it themselves.
Yeah, because he just was doing, like, local stuff in New York, right? Doing stuff at clubs in New York.
Yeah, he was like a...
Special event, like, exclusive.
Yeah, he's a weekend warrior, you know? Yeah. He was like, yeah, special, exclusive. He had, like, an exclusive club that he would throw parties at, and that never made money either. They was like, you had a card, you had to get in the...
Yes.
So stupid.
A card.
Yeah. So if you had taken the time, the energy and the effort to get this done correctly... And you had stayed on the straight and narrow and not tried to, like, be a ticket broker on the side and put all these ham hock events together. If you had just focused in on this and had a day job in the meantime, like where you were trying to pay people back, had a day job in the meantime, you probably could have pulled this off.
Yeah.
Could have pulled off the greatest comeback in music history, mm-hmm. music festival history, and people would have applauded the whole effort. You would have had a lot of haters along the way, but you would have put them to bed when you did it the right way. But you really did this. How more poorly could this have gone?
Yeah, and every step of the way, too, him just saying, no, it's happening. No, it's happening. Yes, we're doing it.
I mean, I'm just thinking about the reel where Billy made this announcement, where he's like walking down some New York street, like a three-year-old screaming, you know, it's happening. My team is on the ground in Mexico. Firefest 2 is going to happen. Mark my words. Yeah, mark your words,
bud.
Yeah,
well, he put that on Instagram, right?
He put it on Instagram. And I've noticed Billy's been absent from Instagram since the permits went online because the comment section, I mean, I came there for the comments. It was so funny. People are like, they're like, 100, the permit said 100 decibels up to 12 hours of only recorded music for only 250 people. That's, so for 4 years or 3 years since you've been out of jail, you've been working on this, and that's what you came up with? 250
renting
people?
Renting a club out.
Yes!
In Mexico.
I could rent Chuck E. Cheese quicker than that for 300 people. And probably, and I got a live band playing. It's Chuck E. and his little band. I mean, honestly.
Yes.
Terrible. You could have done an event at Chuck E. Cheese, and people would have been excited about it. You would have said Firefest 2. You could have done this tongue-in-cheek. There's so many different ways you could have done this. And probably just, like, healed yourself and your reputation along the way, but you chose to pretend like you knew what you were talking about the second time, and you failed. This part of me feels a little, tiny, little bit empathetic toward Billy, because I think he's just a big lug nut. I think he's just a big dum-dum who's hoping that something works out in life. And I have been there. I'm that guy. I'm a big lug nut who hopes this all works out. That's kind of, I'm just like plodding through life, hoping the commercial break, you know, becomes Conan O'Brien overnight. It's not going to happen, but I hope it does. But here's the difference between me and Billy. I don't make Instagram announcements about how I'm going to be Conan O'Brien, you know, how I'm going to be on the Conan O'Brien show tomorrow. So
yeah, he's just bad.
He is. He's bad. It's bad. It's all bad. But now it's over and we all get to go back to our normal lives.
Exactly. But I do have to say, and I didn't want to cut in and cut you off earlier because I know how we tend to go schizophrenic sometimes with our talking. It made me think about, you said Ja Rule had a restaurant. It made me think, I don't know why this popped to my head all of a sudden, but I was thinking about musicians who have restaurants. And do you remember Mix?
Mix.
Mick Jagger's.
No.
Mix here in Atlanta? Oh my God. It was Mix. Like Atlantic or Lenox Mall. And it had like quite a few different locations around here in Atlanta.
I don't remember
it
this.
It was like the fun place to go.
Oh, too. Okay. And the only place that I remember at, it was at Lenox Mall or
yeah,
Phipps?
I think so.
The only place that the only notable restaurant that I remember from that part of town or that I like made an impression on me was that the tavern at Phipps Plaza.
Oh, yeah.
Where the girls were dressed like really nice Hooters girls. Are they still dressing like Hooters girls?
I'm sure
they are. Yeah. I don't remember Mix, but we'll do a little research and we'll dredge up some stories.
Yeah.
I don't.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
It was a good spot to go. Had quite a few locations.
And it was here in Atlanta?
It was here in Atlanta, and I think across the country.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. You know, I once got told by when I was working at one of the restaurants, I can't remember, I think it might have been Listerad, and I was talking like I was going to open my own restaurant because, you know, I was probably high on something, making all these plans that never came to fruition. But I was talking with someone else, like a financial advisor, a guy who was rich, something like that. And he said, anybody who walks into my he was a guy who like dealt with sports players' money.
Oh, okay,
he was
a
financial advisor for sports players, and he would hang out at the bar at the end sometime. And so I'm sure it was at the end of the night, and I'm fucking jizzy jazzed on something. And we were talking about opening a restaurant. He said, if one of these guys comes in and starts talking about opening a restaurant, I said, you might as well take that money and throw it in the fireplace. If you want a place to go drink and have fun, then and you're willing to pay $1 million to do that,
to do it, right.
Cool. You'll have 2 years. It'll be great. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to close the place. Otherwise, for fucking get about it, because restaurant business is the hardest business to return on investment. And it really is. And so
to even make a profit.
Gone. Yeah. Didn't Chipper Jones have a restaurant for a while there?
Yeah, everybody's having
my
one.
Helmet, buddy.
Well, and it reminded me, too, you remember that spot close to where we used to work at the radio station? It was right there on Peachtree. I feel like, I want to say, like, Frank Ski from...
Oh, Frank Ski's, yeah.
From V103 had a place there. But I think it was Sean Combs.
It was. It was Diddy's.
That.
Yeah, yes. It was Diddy's. It was like...
Holy
he
shit,
it was like,
I can't
it was Diddy's.
I forgot he had the
it
restaurant.
It was Diddy's. It was Frank
Ski's. Like Combs
yes,
or something.
Combs. It was Whitney Houston had something to do with it at one point.
Yes,
that's why they call it like the Whitney Houstons, the Houstons down there, because she had something to do with the restaurant. And then Bobby Brown was involved. Every famous person from Atlanta at some point had something to do with this restaurant space, and it never worked.
Yes, it was this one spot, prime location.
But you couldn't park.
But,
yes, there was no parking.
There
was no parking, and that's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think there was a couple shootings down there, too. That might have something to do with it. But, you know, hey, listen, it was prime location. There was no doubt about it. That is a tough, tough fucking business.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what can you do? Listen, I love the restaurant business, but after having worked in every position in the entire restaurant, up to and including, you know, being a managing partner, the reality is it's a very,
very tough,
difficult, stressful business.
Mm-hmm.
I am like headlong into Top Chef rewatch right now.
Yeah.
I'm watching seasons I didn't watch,
mm-hmm.
and I used to love that show. And every time I watch those people just like sweating their balls off to try and impress Tom Colicchio, I'm like, I like Tom Colicchio, but you couldn't pay me enough money to go back and do that. You couldn't. Now, if I was like in an emergency situation, I would run and wait tables or bartend for a couple bucks, which I thought about doing at one point during this commercial break run. Just FYI.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
There's a cute little spot down the street
I
thought about working at.
Stay tuned. Still might happen.
Yeah, exactly.
12 hours of TCB is now turning into like the 14 hours of TCB. And I haven't even told Chrissy about it. So let me explain to her and then we'll be back with more fun and shenanigans right after I load the commercial. We'll be back.
Okay, you're probably wondering why I, Rachel, have taken over the voice duties at TCB. It's pretty simple. Astrid asked me to shut Brian up, even for a minute. Well, lovely Astrid, your wish is my command. Do you want to help Astrid too? You know you do. Leave a message for her, or me, or Chrissy at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. You can be on the show too. Mm-hmm. Just call and say something. Anything. Or text us and we'll text you right back. Promise. Then head over to tcbpodcast.com and get your free sticker. It's your constitutional right to a sticker, and we must abide. You get the point. Follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break and watch all the episodes on video at youtube.com/The Commercial Break. Best to you and Astrid, especially Astrid.
Yeah, we were just talking about all these restaurants that here in Atlanta. I think we found Mix. Not 100% sure it was associated with Mick Jagger, but I could see why you might think that. I could see why you might think that. But I do remember it now that I've seen a picture of the old overhead, the old awning that used to sit there. And that was really close to where we worked.
And then Mr. Diddy's.
Mr. Diddy's. Mr. Diddy, if you don't mind. Hoo-ha, hoo-na. Creepy Diddy on the block. To think, there are probably freak-offs that happened here in Atlanta. He owned a house here for a long time.
Yeah,
he owned a big house here for a long time. Justin Bieber also stayed here for a period of time.
Well, he had a house here.
He had a house. He actually was renting that house from another famous person. Can't remember. Oh, it might have been Ja Rule. I don't know. That might have been. I'm not sure.
It all goes back to Ja Rule.
Yes. But I was, at the time, in the real estate business. And I was building a house that was closer to where Justin Bieber was staying. Mm-hmm. And this is the craziest story that I want to tell you. Search your mind and see if you remember like a restaurant-related celebrity story. I'm going to tell one.
Okay.
So I would drive by this particular house. It's shaped like a spaceship. That's the only way to describe it. And if you live in Atlanta, you know the spaceship house in Sandy Springs.
Yes.
You'll know it. It's on a corner. It's back in the woods. It's up off a very, you know, poncy part of town. And it literally looks like a spaceship landed, but it's beautiful. It's got glass windows. Mm-hmm. It's got this big gate all the way around it. Nice piece of land on a corner of this quiet street. And I would drive by this house all the time to go to this place that we were, to this house that we were building. And then I started to notice that, like, occasionally there'd be a private security guard in the the driveway of this house. And then a couple days later, I noticed that there was like a police officer and a security guard. And I thought to myself, wow, that's strange. Never seen that before. I never knew who owned the house, but it had to have been someone rich. But I was thinking to myself, well, maybe there's some trouble and that's why they're keeping the security guards out there. Or maybe because Atlanta is a hub for all things television and film.
Yes.
Someone is renting the house and they've asked for some additional security. Couple days later, week later, whatever it is, I am driving up that street and there are five or six women who have poster boards on sticks out and it's like, paparazzi, go away. Paparazzi, go home. Justin, go home. Whatever it said. And I'm reading this and I'm like, what in the good fuck? Why are they picketing in the middle of this quiet suburban street in a very rich part of town? Could not imagine why this was happening until I read that Justin was renting a house in Atlanta, and this was likely the house that he was renting. And eventually, it was a scene. There was a lot of people standing out in front of the house. There were paparazzi. There were people parked up and down the side of the street.
Yeah,
it became a big clusterfuck, and the neighbors were pissed.
Yes.
Because these other neighbors, they're very rich and probably some of them famous, and they're not interested in having anybody film or photog around where they are. And so Justin, I think, eventually kind of got ran out of town or ran out of this house, at least, because of all the press that he was driving to this very quiet neighborhood. And I always thought, to me, to be a little bit unfair, it's like, you're rich and you got a gate and, like, leave poor Justin alone. First of all, paparazzi, leave poor Justin alone. At that time, leave poor Justin alone. Now I don't know what's going on with Justin. He's all over the place.
He's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I think that whole Diddy situation blowing up so publicly and him being so associated with P. Diddy. I mean, P. Diddy basically made his career, along with a couple other famous R&B and hip-hop stars. I think something went down there. And also, I think he's got child star PTSD.
Yeah, which happens.
He never grew up. He never had an opportunity to grow up. And now he's got that Hailey Bieber. And she is gorgeous and well put together. And I think she's desperately trying to keep his head directly on his shoulders. Meanwhile, he's in a fur coat and underwear running around screaming at paparazzi. And you can hardly blame the guy because he really hasn't had a normal life.
Yeah.
And I think at some point you just cry out for some normalcy, some stability, some privacy, and none of that is afforded to him. And that's the deal with the devil that you make when you get that famous. It really is. And, you know, who knows what happened with that Diddy? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like, there was a lot of years, a lot of opportunities, a lot of parties.
A lot of creepy, weird interviews and videos that came out afterwards that now take on a whole different context. Mm-hmm. I'm not one to jump to a bunch of conclusions, but some of those interactions between P. Diddy and Justin that are on video are very strange. They're very, like, we're going to have a sleepover. I own you now for 48 hours. Your mom let me keep you for 48 hours. I'm now your daddy.
Yikes.
Like, just weird shit. Like, how did we not know? How did we not know? I mean, lots of people knew, but how did we not know? How did we not go, isn't it weird
that
P. Diddy wants a 12-year-old boy to hang out at his house for 48 hours?
Yeah, he had such an image, though, of just, I mean, being somebody that people wanted to be associated with and make fun music.
And kind of a threatening image, too.
Yeah.
So I think people were, I think it was difficult for people to come out and say something because they were afraid.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. But anyway, that was the time Justin Bieber lived near my house I was building. I remember a night. Do you remember when I was living out on the porch? And there were many nights.
I didn't know you during your porch years.
Yeah. I'm saying, do you remember that I did?
The
porch years. The porch month.
The porch month.
I couldn't even hack it.
The porch weeks.
Yeah, the porch days. The porch night.
Oh, it was more than a night.
Oh, it was probably a couple months.
Yeah.
We had two roommates who actually lived in rooms in the apartment. They actually had the rooms in the apartment. And me and my friend Eduardo would be out on the – we were out on a back screened in porch. I've told many stories about this, but we lived literally on
Sometimes you'd be let in.
Yes.
And that's when you guys would stay up all night.
Yes. Well, if they hadn't locked the door on us, that meant we were allowed to be in. And we would be up all night, high on Colombian marching powder and Bud Light, or whatever we could get our hands on.
Whiteboarding things.
There was a huge whiteboard in this dining room, and Eduardo and I would write music lyrics and play guitar till 7 a.m., and then we'd go somewhere else. Like the river. Yeah, why not? Let's go do our drugs down at the river now that the sun is up and we feel miserable. Let's go do that. And there was one night when we were doing our thing. Both of our roommates were out working. One worked at a really nice restaurant. At the time, we all thought it was a kind of a nice restaurant. Papa Do.
Oh, yeah, Papa Do.
Famous Texas restaurant.
It's still around.
It is still around. So is Papacito's.
It's actually delicious.
Yeah, Papa Do, Papacito's, you know, great food, consistent. If you live in Texas or Atlanta or anywhere where there's a Papa Do or Papacito's, then you know it's a chain of restaurants, these huge restaurants.
They're huge.
They just like food factories, but they have really good food and high standards.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why people keep on coming time and time again. And so one of them was a manager at Papa Do's, and one of them had been fired from his management position at Papa Do's because he was a straight-up alcoholic.
Oh.
And this is like no-joke alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
I need alcohol all the time. And he had like 5 DUIs, like 5. And one night he got caught drinking while he was driving, and the officer drove him home. Like, he gave him a break, drove him home. But this is long before these laws where, you know, your license gets taken away forever because you had your 3rd DUI or 4th DUI or whatever it is. So he was a bad alcoholic, and he ended up getting a job as a general manager of a very large sports bar here north of the city.
Yeah.
I'm not going to name the bar because it's still around. But David and I are juiced to the hilt one night, and I mean soaked in Bud Light and cocaine. Now, I'm just going to be real frank about it. And the phone rings, which both of us then jump directly out of our chairs to throw the, you know, like, it's the police! Get down! Because when that house phone rang, it rang loudly. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It broke the air. It broke the tension. It made it more tense. And who's calling at 2:00 in the morning? It can only be one of the roommates. So Eduardo picks up the phone. He says, I can hear him talking, but I'm not really listening. I'm more thinking to myself, do we have any more cocaine? Should we get some more cocaine?
Is it time?
Or should I play another chord?
A little bit left.
I think I have a lyric in my head. Let's write it on the whiteboard. And he hangs up the phone and he says, get dressed. And I'm like, I am dressed. And he's like, okay, we're going to go. And I'm like, where are we going? We can't go anywhere. We're fucked. We're fucked. We are so sauced right now. Where do you want to go? And we have to go to this bar. And I go, it's closed. It's 2:30 in the morning. It's closed. What do we do? It's what are we going to go to that bar
right.
for? He's closing it down. Do you know who's at the end of the bar? No. Greg Allman. And I'm like, Greg Allman is at the end of the bar? He's been there for most of the night. Also another noted alcoholic and drug addict. Mm-hmm. And let's call this guy
the
Mike.
The great guy.
Yeah. Let's call Mike, the roommate's name, Mike. Mike is closed down the bar, and they're still sitting there drinking. And he called me, and he said, if you want to come and meet Greg Allman, come on down.
Yeah.
And we did. We took this, like, half-hour-long journey, driving 10 miles per hour all the way to this back roads, every back road we could find, you know, turn down this suburban street, turn down that suburban street because the police won't be there and we have less chance of getting caught. We drove all the way to this suburban bar to get there as Greg Allman and his security, his bodyguard, uh-huh. are wrapping things up. Now, Greg Allman had like on and off sobriety for many years.
His autobiography is really good, by the way.
He had struggles. I think this is an off time. Now, I never saw Greg directly drinking because he was leaving when he left.
Mm-hmm.
But when he left, he actually had two guys with him. So one looked like a body man, like a guy who was there either to try and keep him sober and out of trouble or whatever. And the other guy
Security.
Looked like maybe the guy who was off duty, but he was drinking. And so we said hello. He was very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I fawned over him for a minute. He did the kind of the famous thing. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. You know, good to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And out the door and into a limousine and off they drove. And we sat with the second guy who had been with Greg for a number of years and told some wild fucking stories about Greg Allman. And I'll share one. This is all hearsay. I don't know that this actually happened. I heard this from a guy who claims he was there when this happened. That Greg Allman was one night missing in Atlanta, down in Atlanta, and somehow had escaped the body man who was supposed to keep him out of trouble.
The Wrangler.
Yes, the Wrangler. And they found him on a street getting head, smoking crack.
Oh, my God.
In the middle of downtown Atlanta, like in an alley. Like somewhere in, you know, the Centennial Olympic Park area before Centennial Olympic Park, like back in the, you know, early 90s or whatever it was, in the really seedy part of town, they, you know, fanned out and found him completely shit hammered, getting satisfied with a crack pipe in his hand.
Wow.
And had to literally carry him and put him in a car. And carry him back up to the hotel room where he eventually settled down. And they had like locked the door and stand outside all night long. And he told us, now I'll never forget this. He told us that that was their job, was to essentially stand by him. Now, to be clear about Greg Allman, he eventually was very sober to the point, correct me if I'm wrong, because Chrissy's been around them backstage. They don't even allow alcohol backstage.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like you can't even be drinking a beer. Like, if you get a backstage pass, you can't even bring a beer around you. Mm-hmm. Now, Greg has passed, but the later years of his life, he took his sobriety very seriously. But
he had to. I mean, God, he was dying.
He was dying. And if I'm not mistaken, he did get arrested a couple of times with cocaine and crack stuff like that.
Yeah, his autobiography, he tells it all.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like this wild
ass.
I
didn't mention that story, but I can see it happening.
Listen.
Yeah.
Again, it's all hearsay, and so don't take any of this as fact.
I mean, when I was living in Nashville, Keith Urban, and it was a big story because he had married Nicole Kidman, and you know, living in Nashville, she was off somewhere doing a movie or whatever. It was like 4 a.m., and he's driving down the street, and he sees this guy running down the street, pulls over and asks him for crack. And the guy was just running because he was like a trainer and he was up early and running.
Keith Urban asked him for crack?
Yes, and Nicole Kidman swooped in. Like, I mean, it was a whole huge hullabaloo in Nashville because this happened. And then he got like arrested or something. He was bad on crack.
Whoa.
And Nicole Kidman swooped in. He went off to rehab and
Jeez.
It was a big deal.
Yeah, that crack. That'll get you.
So, yeah.
Crack will get you.
I can see. Shit goes down on crack.
Shit goes down on crack. Yeah, I could see not really caring that you're getting head in the middle of a street.
Yeah.
I don't even see how you get head in the middle of a street while you're high on cocaine. But oh, whatever. That's neither here nor there.
Keith Urban's sober now, I would think.
Oh, yeah. He's got to be.
Yeah.
He's too old for all that, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, this was like 2005,
I think. The funny thing is you're
20 years ago.
20 weird. Years ago. That's crazy.
Weird. I know.
Yeah, I really had no idea that Keith Urban was a crackhead. Is this public information?
Back in the day.
Did he go to rehab and stuff like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, he went to rehab.
Okay. I remember that you're a friend of ours, a mutual friend of ours. You'll know who I'm talking about. Worked on movie sets and television sets. Told me about a girl who was on one of the most famous television shows at the time going on, network television show. And I'm not going to say the name because I don't want our friend to, whatever. And she explained to me while the show was still on air that this person was a terrible alcoholic.
Yes, I know who you're talking about.
Yes, to the point where they had to sometimes delay shooting.
Yes.
Or they had to sober her up enough to get her lines out.
Mm-hmm.
Or they had to change complete scenes so she was not in them. Or so that she didn't have to talk in them because she was a mumblefuck, like so badly alcoholic that she couldn't go, an hour without having some kind of drink. And that it was well known
mm-hmm.
all around town that this was going on and she was making a mess of herself all over the place. And I thought the story was interesting when it was told to me. But there was no public information that would mm-hmm. indicate that that was the truth. I believed your
people keep it on under wraps.
And, like hundreds of people on this television set
mm-hmm.
and you didn't hear anything about it until one time you did. There was a video that came out. A video showed her publicly drunk out in the streets of Nashville, drunk and boob hanging out and all this other stuff. And everybody chalked it up to, oh, she's having a good time. Mm-hmm. She's having a good time.
Yeah, because that's commonplace in Nashville.
Yeah, of course.
Now.
That's like Nashville 101. Yeah, get drunk and throw your boob out.
Yeah.
Hey, why not? But now, years later, like 5 years ago, this actress comes out and says publicly, mm-hmm. I really had a problem with alcohol. And especially during the time that I was filming this television show, I've now been to rehab and I'm sober. And thank God for it. So it was funny how it all came full circle. Drugs and alcohol, no joke. And drugs and alcohol in moderation, in experimentation, in the... in the pursuit of pleasure momentarily and understanding that there's always a price to pay even for experimentation and moderation, I don't have any problem with. But obviously, there are people who have real challenges mm-hmm. with substances, and it's no joke. And as someone who could have just as easily gone down that Greg Allman route, now thank God I've never gotten a blowjob in an alley with a crack pipe in my hand, but it could have happened to me. It could happened to me.
Well, if I had have the money.
If I had more money, that's right.
Exactly.
If I had had more money,
the money
then it would have happened to
and
me.
And the people procuring these things for you.
Yes, mm-hmm. that's exactly right. Like the time that the guy from Bare Naked Ladies, the bodyguard from Bare Naked Ladies, told me how he would go to the bad side of Washington, D.C. and get briefcases full of cocaine for Whitney Houston and Bobby Brown.
Yeah.
And I never believed, I always thought he was just bloviating to try and impress the girl that was with us. I was like, oh, that's just he's just full of shit. Until it all came smashing out. And I was like, yeah, no shit. That guy was getting briefcases full of cocaine for Whitney Houston.
Uh-huh.
And Whitney Houston, another one who suffered greatly because of drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Time, money, an addict's worst enemy. And when you got both of those, add in a little fame and some paparazzi.
Oh, yeah.
It's a tale as old as tale as old as time. Strange as it can be.
Yeah, I mean, you hear too, even going back into like the original movie days.
Yeah,
I mean, Judy Garland, bad. She had bad addictions. A lot of those early movie stars had bad addictions to
Betty
pills.
Boop.
Pills and alcohol.
Yes.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they got through. And back then, people would keep your secrets for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think even JFK was like, he was on back pills and all kinds of amphetamines and all kind of stuff. Elvis, Elvis is like he's like the grand, poobah of stories about drugs and alcohol. The guy was literally a narcotic machine.
Yeah, uppers, downers.
Uppers, downers, booze, more uppers, more downers, throw in some booze.
Shots.
And, yeah, smack his butt and get out there and play another show in your Velvet Elvis outfit. And let's hope everything works out okay. It's the way it is. Banana and peanut butter sandwiches.
Thank God we didn't have the money, Brian.
Well, thank God we don't have the money. It's why we work. That's why we work for free here at the commercial break, is because we know if we get just a little tasty teener, it's going to be the best show in the world for about 2 weeks, and then you're going to see us on the front pages of People Magazine, famous podcast.
Our PR company.
Yeah. Famous podcaster gets dick bitten off by raccoons trying to secure blowjob while high on crack cocaine. Possum, even
possum,
better.
Possum.
Terrible possum penis related accident.
That would be so apropos. All
right, let's take a break. More fun to come here on the commercial break. Aren't you glad you tuned in? All right, we'll be back.
You make this rather snappy, won't you? I have some really heavy thinking to do before 10 o'clock.
Hi, cats and kittens. Rachel here. Do you ever get the urge to speak endlessly into the void, like Brian? Well, I've got just the place for you to do that. 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Feel free to call and yell all you want. Tell Brian I need a raise. Compliment Chrissy's innate ability to put up with all his shenanigans. Or tell us a little story. The juicier, the better, by the way. We'd love to hear your voice, because Lord knows we're done listening to ourselves. Also, give us a follow on your favorite socials, at The Commercial Break on Insta, TCB Podcast on TikTok. And for those of you who like to watch, oh, that came out wrong, we put all the episodes out on video, youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, and tcbpodcast.com for all the info on the show, your free sticker, or just to see how pretty we look. Okay, I gotta go now. I've got a date with my dog. No, seriously, Axel needs food. Today is pork chop day.
Speaking of people who have passed away, Chrissy, there.
What a way to start.
Thank you. I know how to do a segue. I'm good at that.
Okay. Speaking of
people who have passed away, do you believe in heaven?
I mean, yes.
A version of it?
Some kind of version.
Yeah, me too. I believe
like
in like
the white clouds.
No, I don't know.
Pearly gate. No. But yeah.
Because if it's the white clouds and pearly gate, there's an opposite version of that. And I don't want to think about that. I think we're pretty close to that right now.
Yeah.
2025. Exactly. That's right. I don't think you can take a space stick up to heaven. But, a lot of people do believe in heaven, and they do believe in that version of heaven, the pearly gates that let you in. What'd you do? You know, you're judged at the end. There's a lot of people in this country, especially, who believe in that kind of
afterlife.
Yeah. The afterlife where you are, there's maybe judged. Not a physical form, but for some reason you can see other people, like a Teresa Caputo kind of thing. Right. And it's an opportunity really to make money.
Oh, yeah.
And one enterprising church in Mexico, is making lots of money on heaven. Now, you might ask, how does one do that? Well, they sell plots of land in heaven for $100 a pop.
Okay.
1 square meter of heaven costs $100. And they have been making lots of money selling land in heaven. Now, this sounds about as interesting as buying real estate in the metaverse. Remember when Snoop Dogg bought like $1 million property in the metaverse? Because Snoop Dogg.
That's right. We don't hear much about that anymore.
No, the metaverse. I don't want to put my foot in my mouth, but I think NFTs in the metaverse, I don't think they worked out how anybody had expected.
No, I mean, they changed Facebook changed their name to
Meta.
Meta.
Yes.
They were so sure.
And how many people are in the metaverse right now? I'm sure there's lots, actually. I'm sure there's lots
probably.
Of people. But remember, they were having like concerts and raves and, you know, all this other stuff.
You tried to go.
I did. I tried to go and they would not let me in. They got scared of me, honestly. I'm like, hey, where's the party? They're like, take that boat over there. But there was no boat. I just went into the water and I couldn't get out. I drowned in the metaverse. They literally killed me.
Right.
I'm like, hey, bro. He was like, get away from me. Literally. You know, you can like type, you know, you type or you talk, right? And I typed, hey, brother. And he was like, I don't want to talk to you. Get away from me. Mommy told me not to talk to people like you. Okay. All right. I get the picture. I was not quite cool enough to be accepted into the metaverse, but I don't feel so bad about it now because I think it was kind of a, I'm sure that it will take off in some form or fashion eventually when this version of reality gets miserable enough. And we're getting pretty close. So, you know, once democracy is totally gone, I'm sure the metaverse is going to be fine. Here's the story. Byline Medium, the online magazine Medium, not the people who talk to people in heaven. I have a confession to make. After I walked away from the church, I struggled for a long time with the nagging feeling that God wouldn't welcome me into heaven. After all, I left the church feeling like I had abandoned a part of my life and my faith, as if I was turning my back on something sacred. But it turns out I needn't have worry. There's a church in Mexico selling land in heaven for only $100 per square meter, which to me seems like quite a bargain. Who knew that getting into heaven would be as easy as forking out a few $50 bills? Let me tell you about it. The real estate deal of the century, a Mexican church called the Iglesia del Final Dos Los Tiempos, or the Church of the End of Times, is offering people the chance to secure their place in heaven by selling a plot of land for $100 per square meter. Don't have $100? Don't despair. There are payment plans available.
I was going to say layaway.
All right. I'm not going to read the whole article. go check it out on Medium. But that is one enterprising young church people. That listen.
Why not?
Again, this is like NFTs. This is going to go to the way of the dodo bird. But I'm sure there are lots of people who are buying plots in heaven. Because for $100,
sure.
You say, well, if it works out, great. I've secured my space. If it doesn't work out, what did I lose? $100? Who cares? Right? It's just like
peace
those people
mind.
Who bought the NFTs. Well, I got an NFT. I got a pixelated dick. If it works out, I'll be a millionaire. If it doesn't, I have a pixelated dick. I guess.
God, I don't know. Whatever happened to all that? I mean, what was
nothing.
The monkey thing that was like so.
Bored ape.
Yes,
Bored Ape is still a thing, and okay. They do trade at pretty high values even still today, but it's really one of the few collections that does. And there is an underground, and I say more like an underbelly, of people who are trading these NFTs, but I think mainly because they went in on the big hype of it, and now they're just trying to figure out a way.
Yeah.
And like anything that has to do with market manipulation, there are probably a lot of algorithms that are just juicing, buying and selling them quickly, or buying them here and selling them there, whatever it is. It's just like all this, you know, altcoin bullshit. The altcoins, 99% of them, they're meme coins and they have absolutely no value. They never will. They're Hoctua coins. They're Trump coins. They're Melania coins. They're, you know, wrestling coins or whatever. If you have the money and it's a cool thing for you to have,
yeah.
Cool. But a lot of people lose their life savings trying to trade these things and beat the algorithms or the people who are on the inside trading them at the highest value because they are pumping and dumping those coins. Never works out. Bitcoin, Ripple, Ether, you know, all that stuff may have some value down the line. Who knows? It's hard to say. Right? And we're not here to give financial advice.
No,
we're the last people you want to take financial
advice.
Yeah,
let's not get on that
road. But the NFTs seem like a ham hock idea to me from the beginning. Now, as digital rights management tool, it does seem cool. In other words, selling the IP of something, passing it on to a person, and managing that rights chain, it's just a little bit more of a highbrow concept than what an NFT is, which essentially is a JPEG that you're... Do you remember Charlie Bit My Finger? The Charlie Bit My Finger video sold for like $1.5 million.
Yeah.
The rights to the Charlie Bit My Finger as an NFT. Do you think the people who bought the Charlie Bit My Finger have made $1.5 million back on people watching that video on YouTube or any other place? The answer is most likely no. Will they over time? Who knows? It's a very famous video. But, you know, there's other things like totally random pieces of art.
Mm-hmm.
But, I told you, I knew this person who literally pixelated some dicks, like drew some dicks on an old Atari system. Just think about it like that. Pixelated dicks.
Yeah.
Made 300 of them. And put them out in the universe, expecting, I think, that this would be the next big thing in NFTs. And last time I checked, which was like years ago, because I was maybe not friendly, but I knew this person at the time. Last time I checked, they were trading at like an average value like 15 cents. Yeah. I mean, and only
because
a third of them bought.
Because the market was flooded
by pixelated dicks. Yeah, that's right. Everybody had anything. The same idea. Yeah. And what can you do with that pixelated dick? Show it to your friends? Look what I bought? Well, I can go on the same trading platform and take a picture of that pixelated dick and show it to my friends too. There's absolutely no value. Now, some of those NFTs have these, you know, they're built-in perks, right?
True.
Like the Bored Ape, you can get into Bored Ape parties, and they have a conference every year, whatever it is.
Bored Ape stolen? Then there was like a thing that was about being stolen.
Yeah, like Seth Green or something had a Bored Ape was stolen, and then someone bought it like legitimately from two people who had stole it, and then they sold it back to Seth Green for like $1 million or something. I mean, honestly, honestly, for a Bored Ape. I get it. You want to be part of the cool kids club. You want to go to the conference. You want to get in on the action. I don't understand the allure of the NFTs unless I really wanted to go to that party and be a part of that club. But I have noticed, as a guy who kind of pays attention to this, that the hype around these things has really gone away. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't see too many people hyping NFTs anymore. Those, all those Twitter spaces and clubhouses and all this other stuff about NFT, they really don't exist except for in a very small circle on the internet now. If you have an NFT and you find some value in it, I'd love to hear from you. Text
us. Would.
Yeah, because maybe I am completely wrong about this, and I'm open to being wrong because I am most of the time.
We could be completely out of touch.
I am. I am completely out of touch. Even though I'm trolling the internet constantly, I'm generally out of touch with what's going on. So maybe there's a burgeoning NFT scene that is just like super hot and I don't know about it because I haven't been invited, just like the metaverse.
Uh-huh.
I've been kicked out of the NFT scene.
Yeah.
Maybe they said, don't show Brian any more NFT content because he talks shit. I don't know. But if you are into NFTs and that's your thing, let me know. And I'd love to hear why you're into NFTs and what you think the value is so that I can better understand from someone who actually got in on it, you know, why this was. And I'm sure that there are people who made millions of dollars on those NFTs.
There were.
Yeah. So
there were.
There were lots of people who made millions of dollars on NFTs. Those are the people who got out right before the crash. That's right. And the crash happened like 3 or 4 years ago, and I just haven't seen much about it since. There were like every article had the word NFT in it.
It was everywhere.
Everywhere. And I haven't seen an article about NFTs in 2 years. I just haven't seen it. But the selling heaven is an NFT. That's essentially what it is.
That's true.
There's almost no value in it except for your own perceived value and the fact that you get to get into an exclusive party, maybe eventually down the line.
The next Firefest.
The next Firefest 3. Oh, poor Billy McFarland. It does tug at the heartstring just for a second. And then I realized, hey, he's a shithead anyway. So $100 for a piece of heaven. Would I buy it? Probably not, but it's like, you know, as a grand romantic gesture, I one time bought Astrid a star.
Yes, you did. And that's sweet.
It was sweet. But they gave us this whole package and this poster showing
I've
you
seen
where you
those
yeah,
advertised.
Where you could see them, you know, where you could find it and how you could, if you got a telescope, maybe you could see it. You know what I'm saying?
It's right there.
Yeah, right there. So it's up in that general direction. So when I talked to Astrid about it, and we got all this material, and we were moving from house to house, and I'm like, oh, here's our star stuff. And she's like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, wait, you don't want to keep the star stuff? And she's like, listen, it's a really nice idea, but I don't think we need to junk up our house. I'm like, junk up our house? We own a star. And she was like, yeah, but do we? But do we? Do we own a star? Do we own a star and do we need a star? And what can we do with a star? I don't know. It seems, Brian. Yeah, and I realized at that moment my grand romantic gesture was like buying an NFT. It was just as dumb. Just as dumb. Why don't I just point to it and say, that's your star, babe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Between you and me, that's your star.
That's our star.
That's our star. That's the sun. Okay. Well, it's Brian and Astrid's sun. How's that?
Yes.
When it's shining on us, right in this moment, it's shining on us, kid. It's shining on us. All right. Everyone settle down. Everyone settle down. I thought it was good. I thought it was a good one.
It's It is good.
When you're in love, you do lots of stupid shit.
Yeah.
You buy shit.
It's like the Encased Rose. Didn't you do that too?
I did. I did the Forever Rose, which didn't last forever. It just magically disappeared one day. And I was like, where did they go?
I don't know. Yo no sé.
Okay, but.
Oh my God.
I did the Forever Rose. I did the dozen, whatever. I did the Gold Rose. I did a lot of like grand romantic gestures. But the grandest of them all was getting married and giving her a bunch of children to irritate the shit out of her. You can't throw those away. Take that. How's that for a romantic gesture? These swimmers are strong, baby. Okay. All right. May 31st. 12 hours or 13 or 14. Who knows? There's going to be a lot of hours of TCB on May 31st. Celebrating 5 years of the commercial break, we are doing 12 episodes at least in one day just for you. So tune in. And so many people have texted in and said, can't wait to see if you guys survive.
If you're able to do it.
Yeah, if you're able to do it. We'll do it. We'll get it done. I believe in us. We'll be tired.
Boxes of five-hour energy that says we are going to do it.
Yeah, that's right. We will be tired, and it will not be easy. But it's better than digging ditches for a living. So lots of people work 12 hours, and they don't complain about it.
I'm bringing wine.
Okay, but you got to wait till like the ninth hour. Okay. I can't have you passing out hour number three. So anyway, May 31st, mark your calendars. 212-433-3TCB, 212-433-3822. Text us or leave us a message, questions, comments, concerns, content ideas at The Commercial Break on Instagram, TCB Podcast on TikTok, YouTube.com/TheCommercialBreak, and TCBPodcast.com for all the audio, video, and your free TCB swag at the Contact Us button. Okay, Chrissy, that's all I can do for now.
I think so.
I'll tell you that I love you.
I love you.
Best to you.
Best to you.
And best to you out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, Chrissy and I will say, we do say, and we must say,
goodbye.